And we've been laser focused on several headlines recently, the natural disasters, but also armed Nazis marching at the University of Virginia, Charlottesville. The president's comment that kneeling NFL players were SOBs. Well, now we want to take the wider view, the much wider view, from space. It's the point of view of Leland Melvin. He was a pro football player drafted by the Detroit Lions, played for the Dallas Cowboys before injuries forced him from the game. Thankfully, he was also an engineer who studied at UVA and became a NASA astronaut. Leland Melvin posted a letter on Facebook this week criticizing President Trump for his reaction to these emotional news stories and his tweets. He writes, "Donald Trump, your boorish and disgusting actions are not funny. You're supposed to be a unifier and a compassionate leader. If you can't do the job, please step down." Leland, welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's great to be here.
It's really nice to speak with you, but this was a very impassioned and direct, and his supporters are going to say, attack on the president. Talk about where this came from.
Well, I watched him in Alabama talk about the SOBs and fire them, And before that, I was actually out of the country when all of the Charlottesville things happened. You know, I was really saddened that there were Nazis marching on the grounds that I studied at. And, you know, having people die in that exchange of, you know, insults and things. And the fact that, you know, the president could not condemn that violence until much later. And the rhetoric and the tone that he used for an NFL player peacefully protesting, silently taking a knee, was an SOB. But, you know, there were nice people in the Nazi group. So that incensed me. I thought about my short time in the NFL, you know, putting my hand over my heart as the national anthem was sung. And I thought about, you know, what would I do in that situation? And I could have been that person kneeling and called an SOB. And my mother is one of the sweetest people in the world. And so to have her be called the son of a, you know, it incensed me. And since then, I've had a chance to talk to a lot of people, friends who voted for Trump and people who didn't. And it started this conversation about, what is this all about? And I really think that, you know, when the announcer in the stadium says, "Rise to honor our veterans," by no means is Kaepernick or anyone taking a knee in any way wanting to dishonor the service of police officers or people who are fighting in our wars. But it's an injustice that's happening in our streets. It's an inequality. It's things that have, you know, been stemmed from slavery. And the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, you know, all of these foundational documents that define our democracy, you know, that's what matters. I salute the flag, I honor the flag, but it's a symbol that relates back to those documents.
Well, and right off the bat in your letter, you make an impassioned plea for those documents. Do you mind reading the very beginning of your letter?
"To Donald Trump, I believe in the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution of this country, even though at the time they were drafted, their tenets of life, liberty, justice for all, and eventual freedom of speech, religion, assembly, press, and petition, amendment ratified in December of 1791, only apply to a select group of people and not ones that look like me."
So you are embracing something that wasn't embracing you originally.
Right. Yeah. Many people tell me, you know, that happened so far in the past and you need to get over that. And what do you want, 40 acres and a mule? And I'm saying, no, I just want there to be equality for all people. There's a problem when young boys, you know, pulling out a toy gun gets mowed down in a Cleveland park, a 12-year-old, you know, versus someone who's, you know, carrying a rifle who has white skin. I've seen this comparison where the police officer will come up and have a conversation with that individual, will not pull out his firearm. And it's not all the police officers. I mean, the police officers have a very, very tough job. And every time I see a police officer, I say, thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. But there are some that are doing such a disservice to a select group of people that sometimes don't look like them.
Well, so you take the president on with what you call his hypocrisy about free speech, but also about just his general tone. Do you mind reading the part about his tweets?
"We have become numb to your outlandish acts, tweets, and recent retweet of you knocking down Hillary Clinton with a golf ball that you hit. Donald Trump, your boorish and disgusting actions are not funny. they actually promote violence against women, especially when your followers act out what you say.
You're pulling no punches there.
You know, I was on a UN panel talking about sexual violence. I have friends that have been raped and attacked. I have actually been raped before. And I feel like if we don't use the right language, we're going to incite people to go do these things. There's a mob mentality that gets stoked at his rallies. He gets people stoked up. You know, you should punch that person. And a guy got punched as he was walking out of the stadium. And Mr. Trump at the time said, you know, I will pay your legal fees. And so this is giving people the right, because this leader is saying that I will help you with legal fees. And that same language has continued past this process of getting elected to now being the president of the United States of America. Words matter. And I mean, look at what happened in Charlottesville. People brandishing assault style weapons, they're weaponized for a march. You know, that's pretty serious.
Look, a couple of things. I am very, very sorry. I had no idea about your own personal history of rape. I mean, to have overcome that, well, that's something. And now we know that one of the other things you're doing is encouraging others to get an education, to, as you did, have something to fall back on when those hamstrings didn't hold up in the NFL and, oh, you had an education and could become an astronaut. Are you thinking of young people when you're hearing the president?
Young people are always listening. Young people are little parrots. When you look at really small kids, they repeat what their parents say. Or if they don't have parents, they're modeling after people that are present. And 2018 is the 50th anniversary of the picture that was taken by Bill Anders from Apollo 8, looking back at our planet. It's the picture that actually started the environmental movement. It started the EPA. And so we're at an inflection point just from thinking about our civilization and climate change and all these other things, and having the opportunity and being blessed to look at the planet from space and to see that it's one blue marble that we're all on, you know, going around the sun. We're all in space together. And if we're going to divide each other with language and hostility and actions, we're not going to have a planet in the 100th anniversary of that Earthrise picture in 2068. So I'm trying to do as much as I can to inspire, motivate, help kids be aspirational, and let them have love instead of hate. And this divisive rhetoric is causing more hate than love.
Well, in fact, you have a recommendation for Donald Trump, perhaps a little tongue-in-cheek, but you say that maybe he should ask Mr. Putin to give him a ride on a Soyuz rocket to the International Space Station. To what?
I think everyone, you know, the president, Congress, should have this opportunity to look at the planet from that vantage point, and it fundamentally, cognitively changes you when you get this overview effect. These petty differences that we have, they just evaporate away because you look at the grandeur and the mystery of this planet. You look at the oceans. You also can see the Amazon burning. You see these things that we're doing to our planet, and it changes your mindset. It makes you want to do better when you come home. And when I was in space, I was working with people used to fight against, Russians and Germans. And I had the first female commander of the space station, Dr. Peggy Whitson. And so I look at what we do in space, and it's an incredible feat to build an outpost where we can live. We've been living since, you know, 2000. All of these years, we haven't had a fight in space. You know, no matter what's happening on the ground, we all work together because we know that if we don't work together, we perish.
Your lives depend on it. You astronauts call this the orbital perspective?
Yes, it's the orbital shift, the orbital perspective, the overview effect. But primarily, it's your differences when you come back home just kind of melt away.
That's Leland Melvin. Leland, thank you so much.
Thank you.
There's a starman waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us, but he thinks he'd blow our minds. There's a star.
Former NASA astronaut Leland Melvin, we'd like to have him back to talk more about the personal story he alluded to. But his book is Chasing Space, An Astronaut's Story of Grit, Grace, and Second Chances. We'll post his letter to the president at hereandnow.org, and your thoughts are welcome.